Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text 11. The chapter entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. Madhu Bhoja Dasharhaha Kukurandaka Vishnabi Atma Tulya Balayar Guptam Nagayar Bhagavatim Iva Madhu Bhoja Dasharhara Kukurandaka Vrishnibi Atmatulya Balayar Guptam Nagayar Bhogavatim Iva. Please chant. Madhu Bhoja Dasarhara Kukurandaka Vrishnibi Atmatulya Balayar Guptam Nagayar Bhogavatim Iva. Madhu Bhoja Dasharhara Kukurandaka Vrishnibi Atmatulya Balayar Guptam Nagai Bhagavatim Madhu Bhoja Dasharhara Kukurandaka Vrishnibi
Atmatulya Balayar Guptam Bhoja, Dasharha, Dashara, Arha, Arha, Kukara, Kukara, Andaka, Andaka, Vrishnabi, by the descendants of Vrishni, Atmatulya, as good as himself.
Balai
by strength, guptam, protected, nagai, by the nagas, bhogavatim, the capital of Nagar Loka, Iva, like, as Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas. So was Dwarka protected by the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja, Madhu, Dashara, Arakukara, Andaka, etc., who were as strong as Lord Krishna. Purport. The Nagaloka planet is situated below the earth planet, and it is understood that the sun rays are hampered there. The darkness of the planet is, however, removed by the flashes of the jewels set on the hoods of the Nagas, on the heads of the Nagas, celestial serpents. And it is said that there are beautiful gardens, rivulets, etc., for the enjoyment of the Nagas. It is understood here also that the place is well protected by the inhabitants. So also the city of Dwaraka was well protected by the descendants of Vrishni, who were as powerful as the Lord insofar as he manifested his strength upon this earth. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshusun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sahapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutaparakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajibam Sadvetam Savarutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalit Sri Vishakan Vitam Strahe Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kantarara Kanta Namastite Tapta Kanchana Gurangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vishubanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namo Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Madhu Bhoja Dasarhara Kukurandaka Vrishnabhi Atmatulya Balaya Guptam Nagaya Bhogavatim Iva. So this is a description of the capital city, Dwaraka. And it's in the context, the verse is in the context of the upliftment of the citizens. Krishna uplifted their dejected mood. And in contact with Krishna, once again, the citizens of Dwarka felt spiritually enlightened. And Prabhupada makes a few points about this connectedness with Krishna. He says that the Lord is present in every particle of all existence. Can you imagine? The Lord is all pervasive, so in every particle of existence. So he can manifest his presence in anyone. It's just a question of a person having some earnest or some ardent desire and devotional service to the Lord. By devotional service, one comes in contact, spiritual contact with the Lord. And so the citizens of Dwarka were rendering service in the rasas of the relatives of Krishna. And because they were exalted spiritual persons, you know, they're described here as the descendants of Vrishni. Vrishni is the first king of the Yadu dynasty. He's the one who goes way back. The Yadu dynasty comes from Vrishni. And the descendants of Vrishni who are mentioned in this verse, by name, they're Bhoja, Andaka, Dasara, etc. They were incarnations of demigods. You remember that when Mother Bhumi was in trouble, the kings were demonic. She went to Brahma, and Brahma went to the ocean of milk, and he prayed for the incarnation of Krishna. So Krishna said, okay, you communicate this message to the demigods that they should appear in the dynasty that I'm going to appear in. That's the Yadu dynasty. So these persons described as the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja, Andaka, and others there, the incarnations of these demigods, and they saw Krishna as their worshipable deity. All the demigods consider themselves subordinate to Lord Vishnu. But along with them in Dwarka, there also lived eternal associates of the Lord, eternal devotees, like Aniruddha. Aniruddha is the incarnation of one of the Chaturvyuha expansions. He appeared as Krishna's grandson, but his eternal service is to be the guardian of Svetadvip in the spiritual world. So Krishna had, as you know, 16,108 wives and one daughter from each wife, so 16,108 daughters and 10 sons. So that means 161,080 sons. So they were pretty ecstatic to see the Lord come back to Dwarka. And because they're spiritual persons, you know, they can see everything as Krishna's property, and they use everything in Krishna's service. Sort of like in New Dwarka, we have the same mood. Krishna is the supreme proprietor, and we become filled with pleasure. The whole world seems full of pleasure for devotees who see the world in this way. It said, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. Vishvam means this world. Purna, everything. And Sukhayate, it's pleasurable when it's viewed spiritually. So this happens. You can see the world. You can see the spiritual existence of the world when you fully contact Krishna. We can meditate like Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur recommends. He says in one place, the earth is always visible to us. Everybody sees the earth every day. So see the earth as an expansion of the Lord's lotus feet. Everything is Krishna's. So we can see the earth as expansion of the Lord's lotus feet and all the living beings on earth as thus sheltered at the Lord's lotus feet. We can see the world this way. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in the 10th chapter when he's describing his opulence, he says, of the descendants of Vrishni, I am Vasudev. So that means he's the son of Vasudev and Devaki in the Yadu dynasty. Vishninam Vasudeva Smi. So that's Krishna and Dwarka. And Kunti Devi also addresses Krishna as Vrishni. She says, Vrishni Rishab. Rishab means the chief. Krishna's the chief of the Yadu dynasty, the Vrishni dynasty. And Kunti says in that prayer, you're the destroyer of political parties who are disturbing the earth. The kings, as I mentioned in a class I gave here last time, the kings are meant to be the representatives of the Lord. And Kunti says, you're the proprietor of the transcendental abode, and you descend to this earth to relieve the cows and the Brahmins and the devotees. Even Arjuna addresses Krishna in as a member of the Vrishni dynasty. When you use the word Vrishni in the vocative, calling out the name, then you say Vrishneya. So that's a name that Arjuna gives Krishna. Vrishneya, he says a couple of times in the Bhagavad Gita. It means, O descendant of Vrishni, O Varshneya, Arjuna says. So the relatives of Krishna, they see him as everything, and that means they see him as the worshipable deity, as some of them, well, the residents of Dwarka, see him as their father, some as their spiritual master, or as their well-wisher. And they understand that time cannot influence Krishna. Krishna is above the influence of time and the modes of nature. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita also where Krishna says, I'm the grandfather of this universe, and the father and the mother. And Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to that verse, he describes that all the living entities in this world are the marginal energy of Krishna, tatastha shakti. And we are in relationship to different persons in the world. Some of them are our grandparents, some of them are our parents or brothers or sisters. But Prabhupada said they're all the marginal energy of Krishna. So they're nothing but Krishna. Therefore, in this verse where Krishna says, I'm the grandfather and I'm the father and all of this, I'm the mother, he's described as a mother even. The idea is that all the living entities that we identify with as our relatives, we can see as nothing but Krishna, the marginal potency of Krishna. And by Krishna's arrangement, we come in touch with them for some time in those relationships. Srila Jiva Goswami commented on some of these verses in this chapter and described the citizens' ecstatic mood in relation to Krishna. They were presenting praise and gifts to Krishna when he returned to Dwarka. And these gifts were saturated with priti. He uses the word priti. That means, you know, special affection, and extraordinary happiness and love. In seeing Krishna again, they were so happy. And the emotions that they felt, the emotions they expressed by their words and by giving gifts to Krishna, this pleased Krishna very much. So this was a, elevated exchange of love in different rasas with Krishna. Now we can apply this to ourselves. We can ask the question, well, you know, can we attain such a level in our relationship with Krishna? Seeing Krishna is actually natural for every resident of Dwarka, and it's also natural for every individual soul. So anyone has this within reach. We just have to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Dwarka. They were free of their devotional service was free of a desire for fruitive activity. They didn't want to enjoy the results of their activity. They wanted Krishna to enjoy the results, and they were in their natural constitutional position as servants of Krishna. And this is what we're discovering by devotional service, that I'm naturally also a servant of Krishna. They were in the mood also of Lord Chaitanya and the gopis. You know, Lord Chaitanya writes that in your absence, a moment seems like years. They also said, in your absence, it was as if a million years had gone by. And our eyes became useless, as if we were bereft of the sun, as if there was no sun, as if there was just darkness. We couldn't see anything because we were unable to see your attractive face while you were away. So Krishna was reciprocating with them and acknowledging their sentiments by glancing upon them and greeting them. And in this way, he removed their misery. And then it's described how he saw the opulence of the capital city, and that brings us to the verse today. And the verses that follow in the next few verses, we'll hear descriptions of the capital city. Any capital city, we know any capital city is the most opulent city, or often one of the most opulent cities in a country. We expect to see high buildings and lots of nice arrangements in the capital city. Here the capital is compared to another capital city. The Dwarka is compared to the capital city Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka. So I had to do some research, find out more about this. And I'll tell you a bit more about Nagaloka and Bhogavati. One other point that Prabhupada makes about these residents meeting the Lord, he says we can also experience this meeting with Krishna by attending festivals in the temple, like the Julan Yatra or the Janmashtami, or during the month of Kartik, you know, we come and offer lamps. In the temple, the Lord accepts worship as the deity. And whether one is qualified or unqualified, or whether one is good or bad, if one approaches Krishna and sincerely offers him whatever he or she is capable of offering, Krishna will reciprocate. And he'll offer his benedictions to those who come to the temple. And what's the best benediction? A deepening of one's desire to serve Krishna. That's described. I had an experience of this when I joined ISKCON. I didn't get a chance yesterday to speak about Srila Prabhupada, so I'll just tell you for a minute in a condensed version what I was going to say yesterday. I actually joined ISKCON in California in San Francisco on a Friday, and the temple commander said to me, tomorrow some devotees are driving to Los Angeles. They're living in the congregation. And you can go along with them because Srila Prabhupada's in Los Angeles and you can see Srila Prabhupada lecture on Sunday morning. So I was completely pleased that Krishna was reciprocating with me because I had just joined and I was going to see Srila Prabhupada right away. And actually, the temple room was over there, the center that, where the Fate Museum door is. That was the entrance to the temple. It used to be back that way. And they had a container of water by the door and a towel, because the devotees used to run around barefoot. And so before you went into the temple, you had to dip your feet in the water and then step on the towel so that the temple room floor stayed clean. And Srila Prabhupada arrived in the temple room for the greeting of the deities. And when the Govindam prayer started and the conch blew, and the doors opened, just at that time, you know, we bowed down. And at that moment, Prabhupada came in through the back door of the temple and went up to the altar of Gornatai, as if like he would come from that door and walk up. And he paid his full dandavats. So by that time, all of us had stood up, and that was the first time I saw Prabhupada paying full dandavats before the altar of Gornatai. And this was January 13th, 1974. There were no Guru Pujas at that time. The Guru Pujas in ISKCON started after the Gaur Purnim in the California and in different places in the world in 74. Prabhupada's class wasn't recorded that day, but I remember some of the things he said. He was quoting a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. If you worship the demigods, you go to the demigods. If you worship the ghosts, you go to the ghosts. If you worship the forefathers, you go to them. And if you worship Krishna, you go to Krishna. Well, his eyes were closed. He was very relaxed. He had his hand on his knees. And with his right hand, when he said, if you worship me, you come to me. With his right hand, he went like this. You come to me. And he curled his forefinger, you know, like we do when we say come. And I was appreciating how Prabhupada represented Krishna and was speaking on behalf of Krishna. You come to me. He was able to, you know, speak as if Krishna were speaking. And his whole preaching was designed to heighten our personal conception of God. We had, you know, maybe some vague ideas of God, but he really sharpened our focus on the personal conception. And one other thing he said was in the class that he was presenting the Bhagavatam version. There's in the first canto, second chapter. You have to rise above the modes of passion and ignorance to the mode of goodness in order to come to the transcendental platform. And he gave the example that he sometimes gives in his books. You have to have an undergraduate degree to go to graduate school or to go to a law school. You can't get in a law school without an undergraduate degree. So your prerequisite is there. Okay, let's have a look at some descriptions of Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka. This verse says that the descendants of Vrishni protected Dwarka just as the Nagas protect the capital of Nagaloka. And the other part of the comparison is that both cities were comparable because they were celestial towns. Nice architecture, nice parks, and rivers are mentioned. Gardens. So first thing I found out by looking on the Veda base, was there are a lot of mentions in other places in the Bhagavatam of this capital city, Bhogavati. The city is actually named after a river, Bhogavati, the Bhogavati River. When Krishna creates Shyamakund, and he digs his heel into the ground, he says, I'm going to summon all the places of pilgrimage, he tells Radharani and the gopis. I'll bring all these countless places of pilgrimage here. I don't have to atone for my sin of killing the bull by traveling on pilgrimage. I'll bring all the waters here. And one of the rivers, sacred rivers, that came to Shyamakund was the Bhogavati River. Now, what place is that? What river is that? Narada Muni explains that in the 10th canto. My dear Lord, the transcendental water that washes your lotus feet is known in the higher planets as the Mandakini River, in the lower planets as the Bhogavati, and on this earthly planet as the Ganges. So this river flows throughout the universe. The Mahabharata also compares the city of Indraprasth to the capital city of Bhogavati, the opulent capital of the land of the Nagas. Indraprasth is a city that was built by the Pandavas. Krishna was there when it was being laid out, when it was being built. And even Vyasadeva was there with the Pandavas to perform religious rites and to bring peace and security to the new land. They built this place, Indraprasth, and that's compared to Bhogavati also. And Krishna lived there for some time, and then he returned with Balaram to Dwarka. As far as the Nagaloka or Patala Loka, the citizens there are demoniac serpents, really demoniac serpents. They're the masters of Nagaloka. And their names are given in the 5th canto. 5 or 10 names are given. The chief is Vasuki. Vasuki's pastime is mentioned sometimes in the Bhagavatam. They're described as extremely angry. They have many, many hoods. Some have 5 hoods, 7 hoods, 10 hoods, 100 hoods. Others have 1,000 hoods. And the hoods are bedecked with valuable gems, and light emanates from the gems. Somehow these gems are, there's no sunlight there, but the gems can create light. It's described that demons live where the sun doesn't shine. And for this reason, they're called the Daityas, which is the opposite of Aditya. Aditya is the lineage. There's a mother, Aditya. She's in the lineage of the sun god. And she has descendants, the Adityas and the Daityas. So somehow the demons use artificial light emanating from the hoods of the giant serpents. They're mentioned in the 7th canto, in the pastimes of Nrisimha and Hiranyakashipu. They actually prayed, residents of Nagaloka prayed to Nrisimhadev after the Lord had killed Hiranyakashipu. They said, the most sinful Hiranyakashipu took away all the jewels on our hoods and took away our beautiful wives. Now, since his chest has been pierced by your nails, since his chest has been pierced by your nails, you are the source of all pleasure to our wives. Because Nrisimhadev liberated the wives of the Nagas from Hiranyakasipu. And the Nagas therefore came to offer their respectful obeisances unto Nrisingadev. Hiranyakasipu had put the Nagas in anxiety. In the Mahabharata, there's one story. I'll tell a short story from the Mahabharata. Arjuna married one of the princesses of Nagaloka. The way this happened, it took place in Hardwar, which is on the Ganges River. You can go there, Hardwar, Rishikesh. And this is... The Bhagavatam in the first canto mentions that Arjuna met this princess. But there's a little further description of it in the Mahabharata. You've heard of mystic cities. One of the cities is that you can travel anywhere in the ether. You know, one of the elements... One of the eight material elements is the ether. So, we have an ethereal element to our gross and subtle body, and we have an ethereal form, you could say, just like we have a mind or an intelligence. There's also ego and ether, ethereal. That's the most subtle material gross element. So if you get mystic cities, then you can travel in this ethereal body. And this is what the princess of the Nagas did. She was in the Ganges at Hardwar when Arjuna was there doing some religious activities. And he took a bath in the Ganges at the conclusion of his rites. And... the Naga princess Ulupi, saw Arjuna. She was there in her ethereal body, and she was attracted to him and abducted him while he was bathing in the river. She pulled him down and actually pulled him into the kingdom of the Nagas, traveling on the ethereal somehow. So Arjuna began a conversation with her, and when they got to Nagaloka, and he said, "Oh, beautiful maiden, you have certainly been bold." It's, you know, very bold for a girl to grab a guy, take him to her place. "Who are you? What is this divine region? What's this celestial region?" Nagaloka, it was. The girl replied she was the daughter of a Naga king, and her name was Ulupi. She said, "When you, Arjuna, entered the river for your bath, I was moving through the waters in my ethereal form. I was struck by Cupid's arrow as soon as I saw your godlike form. O descendant of Kuru, I am not married. Therefore, accept me as your wife." And she explained that such an act would be the highest duty that Arjuna could perform under the circumstances. She knew that Arjuna was virtuous, so she appealed to his good nature with virtuous motives. She said that if he didn't accept her as his wife, she would kill herself. So if he would accept her, then he would save her life. That's certainly virtuous. And Arjuna thought about this, and he decided that she was speaking the truth and that it wouldn't be wrong to accept her as his wife. So he did, and they performed a marriage ceremony. They exchanged garlands, celestial garlands. That was the marriage ceremony. And she fed him nicely. And, they sealed their union according to scriptural injunctions. And then Arjuna spent the night with her, and they conceived a child. And then during the battle of Kurukshetra, this child comes out onto the battlefield. Arjuna doesn't see his son. He goes back to the place in Hardwar. But Ulipi tells him, I'll come to where you are at a suitable time. And she brings her son around the time of the battle of Kurukshetra. And she gives him a benediction. And there's a story about how this benediction was used by Arjuna in the Mahabharata. Okay, I'll stop. Any questions or comments? Bhrigupati?
Thank you. It got very interesting for me towards the end there. So, are these nagas, are they snakes? Are they human beings? Are they half-half? Because in the Krishna book, Kaliya is, I believe, identified as a naga. He's definitely a snake, right?
Yeah.
But then when his wives come to pray to Krishna to forgive him, they, at least as the picture in the Krishna book, is that the top half of their body is human, and they're presenting the human babies, and then the bottom half of their body is a snake. And then it sounds like if Arjuna, I don't think he's going to marry a snake. I don't think...
he's. No, he was...
So that sounds like they're... What
they
are
can...
They?
Apparently, they can assume human forms.
So the default form is a snake form, but they can assume a half-half or a full human form if they like to?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I didn't come across any descriptions, you know, that go into detail about how they can change their shape, but apparently she manifested her, you know, human maiden-like form. Yeah. To associate with Arjuna.
It sounds like also that, you know, going to these planets, some of these, at least this particular planet and other planets that are described in the Bhagavatam, requires more than just travel through three-dimensional space. Because, you know, she pulled Arjuna down into the Ganges there, and the next thing they knew, they were in Nagaloka. Mm-hmm. So, you know, was Nagaloka the bottom of the Ganges, or...
No, Nagaloka is described as lower part of the whole, you know, Jambadweep.
Right.
And lower part of that, you know, half the Jambadweep spreads across the universe, and one of the lower areas there, without the sunlight, is the Patala Loka area. Sariputta and even Suhotra Swami wrote more about the locations of Nagaloka and how we could understand them in terms of what we know. But it's somewhat scientific. Maharaj first, please. Then Archita. And others.
Thank you, Prabhu. What I believe is, it may be a correction, it may not be, unless I misunderstood you. You had mentioned at the early part of the talk that king of the Yadu dynasty was Krishna. Is that what you said? Or did I misunderstand you?
Well, he's described by Kunti as Vrishabha.
No, who is the king of the Yadu dynasty?
Oh, the original king was Vrishni.
Who?
Vrishni. Yeah.
That's not what I understood. Yayati was a king going far back in generations, and he had five sons, one of whom was Yadu. Also, Puru was another one, and he was the origin, if you want to call it that, of the Kuru dynasty. Puru, they became Kurus. So Yayati, one of his sons, was Yadu, okay? So, however, then the generations went one after another. And in the present time that we meet Krishna, we have Ugrasena as the king of the Yadu dynasty. So Krishna is basically, you might call him the right-hand man of Yugrasena. And Balaram is also a right-hand man. I think he's called the city father in this Krishna book. So, however, Ugrasena is pretty much like a figurehead with Krishna and Balaram around, because there's no point in trying to be a king when you know that Krishna is the supreme king and Balaram is the supreme king. And so that was pretty much the way it worked. So what you're saying in one sense is true. He called the shots, and that really is the true king, as opposed to the figurehead king, which was Ugrasena.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Urchita, and then Sebastian and some other people.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the nice class. You made a very, very good point about devotees, pure devotees, Dwarka residents, seeing everything as belonging to Krishna and using it in Krishna service, and in that way being happy. But then we have this statement that they're so unhappy that everything seems dark, which seems incongruous, because Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and who sees everything in me, for him I'm never lost and he's never lost to me. So how can he be so lost to the pure devotees that they become so unhappy? It seems incongruous, because you started out again by saying, residents of Dwarka, they see Krishna everywhere, they see everything is Krishna's property, they use it in Krishna service, and therefore they're happy. But on the other hand, it's stated that they're so unhappy that it seems everything is dark, they can't even, their eyes are useless. So it seems incongruous. Are they seeing Krishna everywhere and therefore happy, or are they not seeing Krishna?
I was reminded when you were asking your question, I was remembering the gopis in Vrindavan. When Krishna left Vrindavan, they were very unhappy. And when Uddhava came from Dwarka with a message from Krishna that the gopis, you know, should, just by mystic meditation, they should feel satisfied because they know that Krishna is everything, Krishna is everywhere. And they said, no, we won't accept this because we want Krishna in his personal form to be with us. So it's like that. Actually, the meditation in Krishna's absence, the meditation is deepened because they are always thinking more intensely of Krishna when he's not there. So Krishna deepened their love by his absence. But to them it was like a darkness also. Yashoda, Mother Yashoda, Radharani, they were described as almost looking like they were dead. Like that. Now, Sebastian. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Thank you, Prabhu, for an excellent class. Very informative. I was just curious, it clearly states in the purport that Naga Loka is the closest planet below the Earth planet. Do we know what the closest planet to Earth is, Mars? And is it just like the material scientists trying to go to the planet that is lower than the Earth?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Mars being Naga Loka.
It's anyway where it is, its exact place is. It's one of the lower planets. There was an incident. I won't go into it. So the point is this, is that Bhima, an attempt was made by Duryodhana to drown him, okay? Not only drown him, but poison him. But first the poison and then the drowning. So he was teleported either by Krishna himself, doesn't say who did the teleportation, but he was teleported to what's called Patala Loka. And in Patala Loka, teleporting meaning your body is transformed, transferred to another realm, another level of consciousness. So he was transferred, Bhima was transferred there, and yes, just as it describes there, there were a lot of guards. As soon as they saw him, they started to bite him. Okay? And they were biting him because they considered him a trespasser. And being a trespasser, that poison that they injected into his body while he was unconscious, what happened was that that poison was the remedy to overcome the poison that Duryodhana had given him. So therefore he woke up. And then he began fighting with the Nagas there. Now the Nagas were snakes, and they spoke just like human beings, okay? They had the jewel, and they spoke. And so Bhima got into a big-time fight with them. And he was, flinging them against the wall and everything. And finally, there was an interruption. As you mentioned, Vasuki was the king, and he also had an assistant whose name escapes my memory at the moment, but that person who was the assistant happened to be a great-great-great-grandfather of Bhima. Okay? So they stopped the fighting. And as a result, the point is that everything became very peaceful, and not only that, but Vasuki was responsible for giving Bhima a potion which would give him the strength of 10,000 elephants. 10,000 elephants. So, therefore, when Bhima came back to Hastinapur, he was not exactly the same person because he had the strength of 10,000 elephants, whereas before that, he simply was a strong human being, you see. So that's basically what we have there. They are snakes, and they have those vicious qualities. Nonetheless, they are under Vasuki, and Vasuki is a good friend of Krishna, as we know from the Krishna book. When there was the churning of the ocean, well, who did they use as the pivot? They used Vasuki, okay? And Garuda had to take off because Garuda is an eagle and he likes to eat snakes. And there, and Vasuki was the pivot. So if you start to eat him, then what happens is that the balance that it was trying to maintain, of that, whatever they called it, that churning rod, what would happen is it would fall over. Mm. So therefore, Garuda took off, and Vasuki did his job. And then, of course, underneath it, there was the turtle incarnation as well. I don't want to get too far afoot, but suffice it to say that Nagas are, as it's been mentioned, they are snakes, and they have intelligence, and they're different degrees of intelligence according to the different Nagas, because some are higher, some are lower, just as we have in any realm.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
And there's a lady behind you. A question behind you, if you could.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. Please forgive me for my lack of Vaishnava etiquette. I showed up really late. But can you give me some reference on to what you're reading, like where, and just so I be informed?
The story from the Mahabharata?
The teaching.
Mahabharata? The other things that you described, which came from Krishna's book and other areas of the Mahabharata, which were mentioned by the speaker. But we've got into the discussion about Nagas, which are snakes. But they're not just snakes. They're very high intelligence. So high intelligence means that they can communicate. And their communication or their form of speech is mentioned in the Mahabharata. So you have that human conversation going on with them. Of course, one of the versions of the Mahabharata was done, he wanted to make it more acceptable to people of this world, so he turned them into human beings. He should not have done that. He had no right to do that. He changed the Mahabharata just to make it so that people would say, "Oh, that's impossible." He didn't want that to be taking place. Okay? So therefore, people would read on because of course, you have a human being who's going to question that when you get this talking snakes. But the whole Mahabharata is filled with all kinds of fantastic, amazing, unbelievable things. So, if you're going to start reading the Mahabharata, you better take a deep breath and back to the sheet.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.
Why?